A little girl at the center of an Amber Alert is home safe after her father returns her to police while on the phone with WRAL. New at 7, our live conversation with an expert on how you can help someone in a crisis situation.
Less than an hour till polls close in Durham. We're talking to voters about the issues that matter to you. Tropical development is possible in the Gulf of Mexico, and for the first time, Hurricane Hunter planes are flying into this system. We're analyzing new data to see when this could bring us rain.
Right now at 7, the father accused of kidnapping his own child remains in jail tonight after an Amber Alert ended in dramatic fashion as Mitchell Grayson called WRAL while still on the run. After an hour-long conversation with Arlena Tillett, he turned himself in. Our cameras were outside of the Durham Police Department when he arrived holding his daughter's arms, who we can say is home and safe tonight. Good evening and thank you for joining us. I'm Ashley Rowe.
And I'm Dan Haggerty. Now, with everything happening in a situation like that, obviously it was a very hectic night in our newsroom where a journalist was put in a position to talk to a man who was going through this type of crisis. And while that certainly is a unique thing to happen in our profession, those types of crisis calls are made every single day to family and friends and colleagues from people who are going through a crisis. So at this time, let's bring in Lena to talk to us about this, as well as our guest tonight, Dr. Mary Hinson, to talk about how we should handle these types of situations. Dr. Hinson, thank you so much for being with us. Lena, let's get started with you.
Right. Yeah, Dan, I can tell you that the entire situation was incredibly surreal. Many members in our newsroom right now are still trying to process it. It was so incredibly emotional. I do want to reiterate, as soon as we got on the phone with Mitchell Grayson, members of our team called Durham Police. Right. The most important factor, of course, was whether Paisley was safe, whether she was okay, and that she was headed to a safe place, and she was on both fronts. However, I'm not a trained negotiator. I was put in a position where I wanted to stay on the phone with him for as long as possible, and it ended up being for an hour and 20 minutes until he finally arrived at headquarters. But of course, these types of situations can be unpredictable, emotional, right, volatile, even violent. We know that the situation was. Dr. Hinson, you know, if you have the ear of someone who is in the midst of a crisis, what do you do immediately to try to instill trust?
Yeah, that's a great question, because very often nerves kick in after trying to figure out what's happening. But one thing that I think is helpful for the person who's receiving the communication or they're involved in the interaction is to see it as an olive branch. If they're reaching out to you, it's because they are needing something. Hmm. That could be support, that could be reassurance, but to see it in that way versus judgment stemming and it be like, oh, you're, you know, complaining, or it could be worse. When judgment starts to come out, that can make a situation escalate. So definitely seeing it as an opportunity to connect and that there's a need there. They're reaching out for a reason.
In longer conversations, are there red flags that you should listen to that might not seem obvious to someone who isn't trained, but that we should be paying attention to when listening to somebody explaining what they're going through?
Sure. So hopelessness or helplessness are definitely red flags. When we hear things such as just end it all, or no one would know if I'm gone anyway, or I can't do anything right, so I might as well not be here. Things that have that type of undertone to them, those are definitely red flags. When someone gives away their things and they say, well, I'm not going to need it anyway, you know, those are red flags. Any type of behavior that's erratic and is just not them from their baseline of how you know them, that's going to be something to clue into as well.
That's really interesting, that concept of hopelessness. It sounded, when I was on the phone with him, that he was really focusing on the safety of his daughter, and he kept saying that he wanted her to be okay. I did want to ask you this question, though, because one of the things he said often was that he didn't have any other option. When people feel that their backs are up against the wall, they may do something that is harmful. How do you explain to them that they do have options?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is what I think of as like grabbing the branch that someone extends. When I hear something like what you're describing, where he says, I have a child, and we may use that as an outlet to say, okay, so you reached out to me and you're not sure how you got here or things got out of hand, but it sounds like you want your child to be saved. Mm-hmm. That it sounds like that is what you really, you know, is really kind of holding you to continue to talk to me, or that's right. Something that's really important to you. When you grab onto that branch or that thing that may motivate someone or be their reason, that is what we want to hold on to. And that is how we get them across the finish line through that crisis to say, well, let's come up with a way for you to be that safe person for your daughter. Mm-hmm. What is it that let's look at some things we can do so that you can make sure that she's safe or taken care of. So focusing on that part that they give you, especially if it's despair, think of what the opposite thing is when they are helpless or hopeless. So catching that and hearing what that is the thing that you really want to uplift or bring alive so that we can keep them engaged.
Dr.
Keeping
Henson.
In mind your tone of voice would also be a really big one there, because we too in our emotions could become overwhelmed.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you joining us here tonight with very valuable insight.
Absolutely.
Lena, thank you for being here at 7 o'clock. Yeah. Also, you can find the complete coverage of this Amber Alert, how it came to a close as well, on WREL.com.
Well, important information there. Let's take a live look now at Fayetteville on what looks like a quiet, nice autumn evening. Rain chances are increasing, though, for parts of the viewing area over the next few days. Meteorologist Kat Campbell is in the WREL Severe Weather Center with an update on what we can expect. Kat?
We're watching an area in the Gulf of Mexico that could bring some rain tomorrow night into Thursday. Hurricane hunters flew into this system for the first time today, investigated it, and based on that information, they lowered the chance that this could develop into something tropical to just 10%. However, it's still going to bring a lot of tropical moisture with it, especially to areas to our south. We'll be on the northward extent of this system, and starting tomorrow night, we could see a little bit of light rain. But the bulk of the rain from this system will be from the triangle south. The chance for rain is the highest toward the South Carolina line and much lower toward the Virginia line. And we're kind of in the middle zone right here in the triangle, where we probably wouldn't see very much rain, but there could be some rain early Thursday. Looks like it'll be out of here in time for the gates to open for the state fair. I'll have a closer look at your state fair forecast coming up.
All right, Kat, thank you. Mark? Okay. Time is running out for those who live in Durham, Fayetteville, or Cary to get to the polls and make your voice heard.
Election day. All right. 30 municipal elections are happening today. Voting closes in less than 30 minutes. WRL's Monica Casey is live for us in Durham, where a lot of candidates are on the ballot, hoping to make the general election. Monica, what are you seeing out there?
Well, the Durham County Board of Elections releases unofficial vote tallies throughout the day. The last one came out at 4 o'clock this afternoon, and it shows that more than 7,000 city residents have voted in this election. It has not been super crowded here at this main library polling place, but it has been steady downtown.
Durham voters are making their voices heard this primary election, choosing from a large slate of candidates. Voter Leslie Saunders is about to turn 72. She's participated in every election since she was 18.
I've voted in California, Tennessee, Texas, New York, Ohio, Georgia, Kansas.
Primary elections typically have lower turnout. Saunders says they are still important.
Too many of my ancestors died so I could vote.
She tells me she's voting on people-oriented issues.
What's important to me here in Durham is public safety, housing. Housing costs have gone up everywhere.
Hester Boy wrote the Bull City Anthem to promote unity. Now he's showing his Durham pride in another way, by voting.
I just really believe our youth matters. Our youth matters, and to have someone that engages our youth and engage some of the issues that individuals may have here in Durham.
He hopes the next city council can tackle a variety of issues.
Like affordable housing, making sure that we keep up with the pace of the growth that Durham is having.
Now, no matter what the results are, Durham will have a new mayor next month after the general election. Elaine O'Neill is not running for re-election. Of the 8 candidates on the mayoral ballot, 2 of them will move on to the general election. 12 people are running for the at-large city council seats. Of those, 6 will move on from today's primary.
We will be following it closely. Monica Casey live in Durham. Thanks, Monica. In the last few hours, Governor Roy Cooper filed a lawsuit against state lawmakers. The suit focuses on a new law that takes away the governor's power to appoint people to dozens of state boards and commissions. Cooper says it's a, quote, blatantly unconstitutional legislative power grab. Cooper vetoed the bill, and lawmakers overrode that veto today, making it law. State legislative leaders have not issued any comment since the lawsuit was filed. That bill was one of 5 vetoes that lawmakers voted to override this afternoon. At least 3 lawsuits have been filed since then. One filed by voters' rights activists claims the bill that made multiple changes to elections laws will suppress votes.
And now to a quick update on a topic I touched on about 2 weeks ago in an in-depth segment, the move allowing lawmakers to decide for themselves what documents become public records and which emails and receipts and conversations we'll just never know ever happened. State Republicans inserted that language into the 625-page state budget without any debate or public discussion whatsoever. And today now, State Treasurer Dale Falwell, who is also a Republican, has said that he thought this was a bad idea, saying it, quote, reduces confidence in all levels of government. The House Speaker, also a Republican, said today that he's a bit surprised by the amount of pushback around the subject. You can read more about how lawmakers exempted themselves from the law in the NC Capitol section of WRL.com. As for Falwell, he says his office doesn't need a law to continue to be transparent.
A mayor known for Kerry's big boom has passed away. After the break, a look at Cocobooth's legacy and the impact he had on the Triangle. Plus, it's almost time to head to the state fair, but first, today crews were making sure the rides are safe. We'll take you inside the inspection process coming up.
Back right now at 7:14, I'm Mark Boyle in the Live Center. We're about 15 minutes away from an update from Fayetteville Police about an investigation of an officer. It is a criminal investigation of an officer. An anonymous tip prompted this. We don't know exactly what that investigation is about just yet. That's what this briefing is going to be about at 7:30. So stand by for updates. We have a crew there, and we'll bring you that information as soon as we have it here in the Live Center in just a few minutes.
Back to you. Interesting. Okay. Let us know, Mark. Thank you. So the mayor, who saw Kerry boom from a sleepy little suburb to one of North Carolina's most populous towns, has passed away. Booth, Cocobooth, has served as mayor for 12 years in Kerry. WRL's Gerald Owens joins us now to talk more about the legacy he left behind.
One of the people who helped make the town of Kerry what it is today has died. Former town councilman and longtime mayor Cocobooth died yesterday at the age of 91. When he moved to Kerry in the early 70s, fewer than 8,000 people lived there. Now, 50 years later, nearly 200,000 residents call Kerry home, along with hundreds of businesses and major developments like Fenton. Now, Booth's time as mayor from 1987 to 1999 is cited by many as integral to the town's growth, including his attention to the town's aesthetics and his work getting the Page Walker Arts History Center restored. The amphitheater in town is named after him. As current mayor Harold Weinbrecht worked with Booth at SAS and recognizes the legacy he is now tasked with maintaining.
I think the legacy is good, responsible growth, the evolution of Kerry. When you look at the lifespan of Kerry over time, it went from a small bedroom community to something more. And we started getting one of the best places to live in the United States during his tenure. And that's how much of a difference he made.
Mayor Weinbrecht ordered all flags to be lowered for 12 days, the number of years of Booth's term as mayor. We don't have funeral details yet, but Mayor Weinbrecht says that the day it happens will be a day of remembrance in Kerry. Dan?
Quite a legacy. Gerald, thank you.
Starting tonight, resurfacing projects will cause lane closures during overnight hours in Wake Forest. The work is happening on Durham Road between Capitol Boulevard and South Main Street, and on Waite Avenue from South Avenue to Dunn Creek. The work will happen from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. on select nights through October 24th. Drivers are encouraged to avoid the area if possible.
With less than 24 hours until the North Carolina State Fair kicks off, inspectors are checking all of the rides to make sure they are safe for you and your family. Whether you are a thrill seeker who craves the speed and the height, or you prefer the slower things like the carousel, North Carolina has some of the strictest standards in the country for this sort of thing. The state inspects every ride every time they are set up. Dennis Brown is an inspector with the North Carolina Department of Labor. He says most damage happens in teardown and transit, so they look at rides before they are even unloaded from the trucks.
We inspect a ride every time it's set up. A lot of these rides, we just looked at them in Pitt County and Wayne County and Wilson. We've seen all these rides over the last couple of months several times.
Most injuries on amusement rides are human caused, so inspectors say it's important to follow the rules when you ride. This year's inspectors have to check 96 rides at the fair.
Morrisville has a new temporary disc golf course as the sport grows in popularity. It's called Dragonfly. It's located along Town Hall Drive and winds through the future town center site behind the Morrisville Police Department. A ribbon cutting was held this afternoon to celebrate the new 9-hole par 3 course. It's available 7 days a week from sunrise to sunset. I wanted to play disc golf.
I'd give it a try.
Okay, we're gonna go.
All right, let's do it. Beautiful White Lake tonight. Oh my gosh.
The sunsets are just stunning in the 7 o'clock hour.
Meteorologist Kat Campbell joining us right now. We've had some fortunate weather recently.
Yes, we have. I mean, most of last week was dry. We've had the first half of this week dry. Changes are coming, but just in time for the state fair. I want to show you for the first time the Ferris wheel is lit up tonight. 67 degrees. We are less than 48 hours away from the fun kicking off. Gates open at noon on Thursday. Luckily, it looks dry on Thursday at noon, though we do have a chance for rain in the morning. It's still looking dry for the start of the state fair. We lowered the high a little bit, 76 instead of 78 now. And even as we get toward dinner time, we should stay in the 70s. Nice weather if you want to eat dinner out at the state fair on Thursday. I mentioned that the chance for rain would be there during the morning hours, mainly from the Triangle South. And that's because of this Gulf system that we're tracking best rain chances toward the South Carolina line. And that would be tomorrow night into Thursday morning. Certainly not a washout, but it's something that we are keeping a close eye on. And then there is another system headed our way for the end of the week and into the weekend. We've got a cold front on the way that brings a chance for a few showers and then knocks our temperatures down by the end of the weekend into early next week. The chance for rain about 50% tomorrow night into Thursday morning. The best chance would really be toward the Sandhills and Fayetteville. Check in for an update with meteorologist Mike Mays tonight. Hurricane hunters investigated that system, so we've got new data going into our models now. For Friday, we have a small chance for rain ahead of the cold front, but better chances come on Saturday. A couple of opportunities, and I know a lot of us really could use some rain in our yards, so that may be good news for some. For others, you're thinking about how it could impact your weekend plans. So let's take a closer look here at Futurecast. I want to point out the bulk of the rain stays to our south with this Gulf Coast system. However, tomorrow night and Thursday morning, that's when we could see some showers move through, but they should clear out pretty quickly Thursday, perhaps a few showers left at the coast at noon. All models showing dry weather around Raleigh at noon on Thursday, though. Great news for the state fair. 76 degrees the high. Just keep in mind that rain icon for Thursday, just for the morning hours. On Friday, we've got a 20% chance for rain. This particular model may be a bit overdone. It switches to low resolution model data for Friday. So check in for an update on Friday tomorrow. We've got that small chance for rain, but it looks like it would be a better chance Friday night into Saturday. If you are headed out tomorrow morning to get your exercise, it's partly cloudy, a nice start to the day. By 8 a.m., 53 degrees. By 10 a.m., already up to 62. But we do cloud up during the day. We're cloudy during the evening hours, and that will come with a small chance for rain tomorrow night. Our 7-day forecast features 70s for highs for the remainder of the work week. Once we get to the weekend, here comes the cold front on Saturday when it swings through, brings a chance for rain and perhaps some thunderstorms as well. You may need to head inside very quickly to dodge some of the showers and storms for the weekend. But, you know, there's so many fun things to do indoors at the state fair, so I think that you'll be in luck if you're headed that way. And if you're waiting on some cooler fall weather to head to the fair, Sunday is your day, and I will be there myself.
All right.
Here we go. It's getting started. Yes. Thanks, Kat. The Canes are gearing up for their season opener, and your next trip to support them will include new food options at PNC Arena.
Hockey season is back. What's fueling Caniacs this year? After the break. cannot believe hockey season's back, but it's here. Less than 24 hours, hockey fans in this area will fill PNC Arena for the Hurricanes' season opener.
The Canes take on the Ottawa Senators tomorrow night. They have their sights set on a Stanley Cup win after making the playoffs for the fifth straight year, but losing out in the Eastern Conference Final last season. We don't need to talk about that. We'll move on.
This is it.
You can look for live team coverage right here on WREL before and after the game. The puck hits the ice Wednesday at 7 o'clock at PNC.
Awesome.
When you do make it to the arena, you'll notice some new food items on the menu.
PNC not messing around, all right? They're serving up three new local options, the Barbecue Lab, Gonza Tacos and Tequila, and the Optimist Coffee House, ready to help fuel you for every single game. In total, there are now more than 12 food and drink options. It's really just a big part of going to the game now is having a good meal. There's also a self-serve candy station for the kids and the adults. That's in the works as well.
Duke Health partnered with Spirit of Children to help kids at Duke's Children's Hospital celebrate Halloween a little bit early.
Let's take a look. Some of the patients and their families got to pick out costumes, create arts and crafts as well as enjoy goodie bags, which you have to hand out. They were also able to hang out with the adorable therapy dog dressed up as Stitch. I like it. The carnival gave everyone a much-needed break to enjoy some of the seasonal fun. Halloween is just a great time of year.
Oh, I love that.
So no one matched all the numbers to win the massive Powerball prize, but still, check your tickets.
Yeah, four sold in North Carolina are worth $50,000. That's still a good chunk of change. The jackpot has surged to $1.7 $3 billion. That's the second largest jackpot in U.S. history. You have another chance to win it tomorrow night. Watch the drawing live here on WRAL News at 11 o'clock. I feel like every time we talk about the Powerball now, it's like, oh, this is one of the largest in history. It's just getting so huge.
I want it to get up to like 10 billion. Like, just keep it going. You know, I need a big, big win here. Thanks for being with us tonight.
We'll see you at 10 on Fox 50 and 11 on WRAL.
Keep watching WREL News over the Air Channel 34 and Spectrum Channel 1257.